Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
A recurrent theme in ethology is that we can't say anything conclusive about what a behavior means until we understand the context in which it occurs. This idea of taking a wider view, a more comprehensive and ecological view, is one that is slowly but steadily gaining traction in other disciplines. However, it's still a minority view, and there's no shortage of studies that give us little, if any, understanding of the context in which the studies are being conducted and from which the results are being extrapolated, often to much larger populations. I was thinking about this when I read a news article about some canine genetic studies that were reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. An international team of researchers led by Adam Boyko at Cornell concluded that dogs may have been first domesticated in Nepal and Mongolia. The research team analyzed 185,800 genetic markers in more than 4,600 purebred dogs of 165 breeds. And they also analyzed the genetics of 540 village dogs from 38 countries. Those are pretty big numbers. However, 4,600 dogs of 165 breeds isn't as big as it seems. Even though 4,600 purebred dogs seems like a large number, that's only 29 dogs per breed. And if you work around purebred dogs, you know that there can be a fair amount of diversity in those dogs. Relative to 540 village dogs from 38 countries, that's roughly 14 village dogs per country. Additionally, we have this definition problem. How are these researchers defining domestication? Because they acknowledge that more study is needed to determine whether the early dogs were scavenging scraps from hunter-gatherers or if they were assisting in the hunt, it appears that the researchers have some very clear ideas of what characterizes a domesticated dog. And because scavengers don't seem to rank as high as dogs who assist in the hunt, I assume what they're looking at is strictly human domestication. But we don't know. Are they ruling out the possibility that pre-humans had tight relationships with canines, and that those canines might have been as genetically different as our early humanoid ancestors are to us? Even though they might have been able, like our early pre-human ancestors, to breed and successfully reproduce, where are they drawing the lines? And that isn't clear. So in the end, the study winds up posing more questions than it answers. I'm a big believer in self-domestication. I think self-domestication occurred a lot earlier than what we think of as human domestication. I think that humanoids and domestic canoids co-evolved. It was a dance, and some individuals participated in the dance on both sides, and some didn't. And eventually, their respective populations reached a tipping point where it became more common for them to coexist than to live separately. Is the genome going to tell us that? I don't know. I don't think it's an inviolate code. I don't know if the snippets that we associate with certain behaviors now are the ones that were associated with similar or quite different behaviors 15,000 years ago. But it's interesting. Increasingly, archaeologists are talking about how critical it is to keep findings in their original setting as much as possible and to totally document everything going on in that environment before they're removed. I think we need to start doing the same thing with genetic studies, particularly given the effect of the epigenome, the ability of environmental factors to change genetic expression. So while these studies do tell us more about dogs, they leave a lot of questions unanswered. But to me, that's a good thing.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.